Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh my God, you hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
All right, let's get this week started. A major, major breaking piece of news in the SEC involving a team that some people were just talking themselves into as a playoff contender, as a championship contender. It is the Florida Gators. Here is their head coach, Jim McElwain, explaining that their quarterback, Will Grier, will be unavailable for 365 days.
You know, Will Grier won't play this week and obviously in the near future.
And why will he not play right now and in the near future? Well, they have a positive drug test in an NCAA test. And this is, I'm going to get into this in a minute here, so rare that I can't even wrap my head around this. But here is Will Grier, the quarterback, the redshirt freshman quarterback starting for Florida right now. Done a pretty good job at it. And he is understandably emotional hearing that he won't be able to play football for the next year.
I took an over-the-counter supplement that had something in it. And I did not check with the medical staff before taking it. I really hope that that people can learn from my mistake. And I'm really sorry to everyone. Just really sorry.
So that was Florida quarterback Will Grier. He says he got an over-the-counter supplement at GNC and did not take a look at the ingredient list and match it up against the NCAA banned substance list, and he ends up testing positive. And the NCAA's ruling is if you test positive for a PED, you cannot play for 365 days. And so Florida not only has to finish out this season without Will Grier, the quarterback who had just emerged as their leader on the field and a guy they thought could lead them to the SEC championship game in Atlanta and perhaps beyond, but they have to start next season in 2016 without him for the first five or six games until he's available to play again. Now, I don't know if he's able to appeal and win an appeal or how this process really works with an appeal because it just doesn't happen. Like, I have never been more stunned about a piece of news, I think. That's kind of a broad blanket statement, but I'm as surprised as I possibly could be about this, not just because of him being out for an entire year, but the NCAA doesn't drug test people. This is the rarest thing ever. I was an NCAA Division I athlete in cross country and track and field, competed in three NCAA championships, and I wasn't drug tested one time. And I had two medical red shirts, so I was a college athlete for 6 years. I didn't get tested by my university once. I didn't get tested by the NCAA once. I texted a buddy of mine that's the head cross country coach at Mississippi, at Ole Miss. He's been there for 3 years. The NCAA hasn't tested one kid on his roster once. Now, they tell you that, like, hey, at any point in time, NCAA drug testers can track you down and you have to tell the guy who calls you on your cell phone. You have to provide that information. You have to tell the guy where you're going to be the next day and he's going to show up and make you pee in a cup. But literally, this is something that does not happen. And whether or not Will Grier did or did not know what he was taking, or whether it even made him a better quarterback, these are things that are really beyond the scope of the discussion right now because we really don't know. It's just shocking. And my thoughts on the NCAA and drug testing has always been this. It has to be, it probably is rampant in college football and in college sports because of how cheap some drugs are versus how much is to be gained from a college scholarship. And I always wondered, in the running world, the one that I was in competing, full scholarships were pretty rare because it's a men's Olympic sport. But if you take a guy, especially from a different country, and his life can change by having an American education paid for, well, suddenly the value of that American education is a lot more expensive than what it would cost to shell out money for something like EPO that would allow his blood cells to carry more oxygen. So I have no doubt that in college I got my butt kicked by some guys that were on the juice, because in my entire time in school, one of my teammates got tested. One of them. Like, of the 30 or 40 guys that were my teammates for 6 years, only one of them got tested in that entire period. And his test came back negative. He wasn't on anything. So just the idea of Will Grier getting selected for a test is bizarre in and of itself. Like, I can't come up with a single NCAA athlete of any consequence who has tested positive for a drug and been suspended. Like Mitch Gerry, the Michigan basketball player, he got popped for weed and he was suspended for 365 days. And that's why he ended up not going back to Michigan and entering into the NBA draft. But that was weed. Like, that's not surprising right there. The PED factor is surprising. And I've always said this about PED testing in sports, especially with regard to the NBA and sometimes with the NFL. Like, in the NFL, we've seen some guys that are of consequence get tested or test positive and get busted, like Antonio Gates this offseason, Brian Cushing, the linebacker from the Texans a couple of years ago. Every once in a while, you see a big name go down, but very rarely. I mean, you're not seeing the Adrian Petersons, and maybe they're all clean. I mean, I guess there's a possibility in this discussion that all of these guys are clean and that it's only the guys that are dirty are getting caught. But, you know that old adage, born at night but not last night? I mean, I think that a lot of basketball players are probably using, and can you name one NBA player who's gotten popped? One NBA All-Star that I can think of, Rashard Lewis. And that is, seriously, that is a sport where it would help a ton. I mean, if you're winning an NBA championship and you're playing in the NBA Finals, you have to play 100 games. Those guys' legs don't have any juice at all. That's why you don't see any pressure defense in the NBA full court, right? Because guys can't run up and down the court for 48 minutes 82 times, and then add in the playoffs. And in the NBA, after the third drug test in a season, they know that they're not getting tested again. They can only test you 3 times. So if a dude is in his 42nd game of the season, that's his third test, he knows that he can juice until the end of the NBA Finals. So it is really fascinating to see all these different sports with different testing procedures and how often certain guys get busted. And I got to hand it to baseball. Baseball is the only sport that routinely catches difference makers and gives them like huge suspensions. Alex Rodriguez, Manny Ramirez, Ryan Braun. Melky Cabrera is not on that Hall of Fame tier like those other guys, but he was an All-Star the year they caught him and wouldn't let him play in the playoffs for the Giants. I mean, there are routinely really good players in Major League Baseball that get caught left and right. And everybody thinks Major League Baseball is a drug problem. No, I think they just have better testing policies than everybody else. And bringing things back to the SEC and Will Grier and the University of Florida, anybody rushing to say that they're not going to win the SEC East, I would take a look at their schedule right now. Because they have LSU next, and they have Georgia after that. And everybody knows the cocktail parties in Jacksonville, so it's not a true home or road game. They have to go to LSU. So let's say they lose those two games. They're 4-2. Well, they get to wrap up their SEC play with South Carolina and Vanderbilt. Chances are when they play those games, those two teams will have a combined one SEC win, and it will be when they play this weekend, when that win is assigned. So Florida, they already have head-to-head wins against Kentucky and Tennessee, and they're, in all likelihood, even with Treon Harris starting, going to finish the season 6-2. I mean, go ahead and write their name in Atlanta. I mean, Georgia would have to beat Florida head-to-head and win out to be tied 6-2. And Tennessee would have to, at 1-2, they would have to win out and cash in their tiebreaker against Georgia. I mean, and they've already lost to Florida. So I still think the odds are that Florida ends up playing the SEC West champion in Atlanta, but it does take them, I think, out of the national championship picture. And one of the reasons I think that is because McElwain comes from the Saban school. He was an offensive coordinator for a couple of Saban's championships at Alabama, but the guy that he clearly prefers to work with is the taller, strong arm, drop back style quarterback like Greer that completes 65% of his passes, 10 touchdowns to 3 interceptions this year. He's more of the classic pro style quarterback that he's worked his entire career with. Now, Treon Harris, if you look at his career stats, I mean, he's done some things. I mean, 11 touchdowns to 4 picks, so he doesn't turn the ball over. But in his career, he's only a 53% passer, and he runs very well. He ran for 330 yards last year as a true freshman when he started some games for Florida. But that's not what McElwain is used to maximizing. He's not used to taking an undersized mobile quarterback and saying, you know, how can I cater my offense to this guy and get the most out of him? But that's what he's going to have to do if he wants to keep them in the championship hunt. And that next game going up against a pretty hot LSU team that has a difficult running back to stop, and Mr. Fournette, that's not ideal. I mean, you want Greer in that game. He's made a number of plays this year and seemed like he was just starting to find his way. And that leaves them in a really awkward position, because if Harris goes out there and starts killing it, what are you going to do with him next year? How many reps do you give Will Greer in the offseason and during the beginning of the season when you know he's not going to be available until the fifth or sixth game? Because I think most places would like to have a guy that's their quarterback and know who it is going into the season. No one wants to have a stopgap quarterback for 5 or 6 games and then bring him in. So it really leaves Florida in a weird place right now. But given the fact that they already have 4 wins, and a number of them in the SEC, and a number of them against SEC East teams that would potentially come up in tiebreakers, the fact that they've got South Carolina and Vandy left, I still think they're going to Atlanta. Now, 843-652-3776 is the number. This is Sound Off. I'm Lewis Woodard. Dabo Swinney is asked in the postgame press conference after Clemson takes care of business against Georgia Tech. I mean, takes care of business. They look really good. I was up in the booth for Coastal Carolina against Presbyterian and had that going at the corner of my eye. Clemson was moving the football. And in no point in that game was it in doubt. Clemson is still undefeated. They're in the top 10. You would think that the press conference afterwards would go pretty smoothly, right? Most of the testy press conference sound bites that we get are after a coach has lost or after a coach has lost control over his team. Dabo and his boys are not losing, and he certainly has control over his team. But enter clueless national reporter who asks Dabo Swinney about Clemsoning, and Dabo goes berserk.
You talked about people saying, how are you possibly going to get ready for this game? And I know, as unfair as that term has been in the way it's been applied to Clemson, the whole Clemsoning thing and losing games you're not supposed to, how does this team kind of approach that differently in your mind? Is it a matter of, like you said, that you're focused one game at a time, or is it a matter that they don't even think about it anymore?
Well, I think it's ridiculous that you're even asking me that question. That you even say the word. I mean, I'm serious. I'm sick of it. I don't even know why people even bring up the daggum word. How about some of these other teams out there that lose to unranked opponents all the time? That's our 33rd win versus unranked opponent. We ain't lost to anybody unranked since 2011, but I have to come to a press conference in 2015 and get asked that. And that's all media bull crap. I can tell you how they feel about it. They don't like it. It's a lack of respect. It's not doing your homework and paying attention to what reality is. Should not be asked that question. Period. That's how we feel about it. This football team right here has earned the respect. Ain't nobody giving us anything. Not 1 ounce of anything. They've earned everything they got. Well, same thing today. Rhetoric on TV today. Same old bull crap. People need to get some more adjectives. This football team is shown up. What else they got to do? We've beaten Ohio State, Notre Dame, LSU, Oklahoma, Georgia. All quit talking about that. It's like people trying to push their own agenda out there. And I can't believe I got to come into here with a 5-0 football team that just had a great win and have to be talked about Clemsoning. I shouldn't even be in the conversation.
Now, we kind of got into this discussion a couple of weeks ago when these coach rankings come up in the offseason and Dabo never gets ranked in the coach rankings where his accomplishments in terms of one loss record should dictate where he would land on that list. Everyone dismisses him, and people really dismiss the Clemson program, despite the fact that, once again, at this stage of the season, they're putting together a top 10 caliber season. They're 5-0 right now. They're ranked in the top 10. They're coming off of four consecutive 10-win seasons, and in the last three seasons, they have really impressive bowl wins over the likes of LSU, Ohio State, and Oklahoma. And for whatever reason, those wins aren't turning into national respect and national cachet the way you might expect and the way that Dabo Swinney currently hopes that they would get. And how much of that is the fact that he has a funny name or the fact that he is seen as overly emotional or the fact that he has a very southern accent? I mean, I don't know. All of these things mix up into perception in people's heads and gives them a snap judgment. And I don't know what it was about that one question that made him go berserk. But Clemsoning as a term has to be the laziest media term ever. Yeah, I mean, it has to be. It's the laziest thing ever. Like, if the idea is that they lose to teams they shouldn't, well, they've got 33 straight wins over unranked teams. Like, what? You know, that hasn't happened since 2011. And so my question to you guys, 843-652-3776, what does Clemson have to accomplish for that word to go away? You know, what do they have to accomplish for Dabo and the program to get the respect that their winning percentage in most cases would dictate? I'm interested in hearing your guys' thoughts on that. I'll share mine. And also coming up next segment, we will also get into Steve Spurrier calling out Brandon Wilds for not wanting to play against LSU this weekend. Is it right for a head coach to call out a player for not wanting to play hurt? That's coming up next in Sound Off.
Now, back to Sound Off, taking your calls like we posed to be.
Kind of an odd dichotomy there between the music bump back, Brian, and the voice guy asking people to call in with hot takes. I don't know. I don't know what you're doing there, producer of this program. Welcome back to Sound Off. I'm Lewis Woodard. As the voice guy said, 843-652-3776 is the number. Topic right now is, what is it going to take for Clemsoning to not be a word? I'm going to share my thoughts on this after we play another Dabo clip, but we played before the break the first one where, you know, shouldn't be a story, period, you know, where he gets really heated. The National Reporter, I mean, he got blasted with a serious heat round from Dabo that he wasn't expecting, and you hear the question, and he basically, the way he tries to phrase it is, oh, I didn't mean it like that. I meant, does the fact that people use that word motivate you more? That's the angle the guy tried to pull with his follow-up question. Dabo still was not satisfied with that.
I appreciate what you're saying. My point was simply that this is a team that clearly rebounds quite well, even after a high.
If we lose this week, it ain't because of Clemsoning.
No, obviously.
It's because we just got beat. We're human. We're just human. Good God Almighty, man. Look all over the country. You got all kind of teams out there getting beat. I mean, we're a football team that has earned everything they've got. And again, to answer your question, they don't like that. It's a lack of respect for what these guys have done. This program doesn't take a backseat to anybody. We're not better than anybody. We can lose Boston College. That's the biggest game of the year. They're dang capable of beating us. Had a great chance to beat us last year. We were fortunate as heck to win that game. But we won it. And if they beat us, it ain't because we had some bad whatever. It's because they just beat us. That's football. It's like everybody sitting around waiting on us to lose a game so they can say, oh, well, there you go again. No, that's bull crap. Next question.
Dismissing it. Next question. I don't know, and here's my take on this. I don't know if it was literally 2011 when they won the ACC title. They start out 8-0 and they finish 10-4. So they lost four of their last six games, including the West Virginia Orange Bowl debacle. I don't know if that's what's permanently ingrained in a lot of national pundit and reporters' heads that makes them think that's Clemsoning. I don't know if it's the idea that Tommy Bowden had a lot of really talented teams that weren't top 25 caliber teams that made people think like, okay, that's Clemsoning. But they've been so consistently good. This is the fourth year now where they haven't lost to an unranked team. I mean, their losses over that stretch have been to top 10 caliber South Carolina teams, top 10 caliber Florida State teams, a top 10 caliber Georgia Tech team that won an Orange Bowl and beat Georgia and beat Mississippi State. I mean, those are the teams that they've been losing to lately. A Georgia team that had both Chubb and Gurley healthy. And they really haven't lost. They haven't had a bad loss since probably 2011. And it is crazy to think that that's still out there as something. Like, you can turn on the TV and hear Jesse Palmer talk about Clemsoning. And you wonder sometimes with national guys, and I always try and think about this. And clearly everybody wants a national gig. I'm not just going to like burn national reporters, national TV guys. Everybody wants national gigs. That's the top. There's a reason why the word national is there. But you have to cover so many different teams that you can't possibly know as much as you should to talk about them. And I know as North Carolina Tar Heel fan, as Carolina Panther fan, as, you know, when I hear people talk about my teams in an ignorant way, I get really mad. You know, I do. Like, please tell me again why Roy Williams isn't a great coach. You know, his two rings would like to continue this conversation. Please tell me why Cam Newton's not a good quarterback. Please tell me why you think that Colin Kaepernick, RG3, and Ryan Tannehill are better than him. Where are they now? Please, please tell me more about that. So I get really frustrated when national guys don't really do their homework. And I think that in regard to Clemson, of the few things that they know about Clemson, it's, oh, Clemson's going to Clemson. It's Clemsoning time. And it just really isn't valid. And I will say this about Dabo, and this has been my take for a long time, and we learn this when we're 5, 6 years old, right? The first time you go to school, or the first time one of your friends calls you a name that you don't like, and you cry to your parents about it, what do they tell you? Right? Don't get defensive. Don't tell them you don't like the nickname, because then it becomes fun. And Dabo Swinney has just been given a bad nickname. He's like an 8-year-old in second grade that's been given a bad nickname and is just reacting emotionally to it. So all the other kids in the class think it's funny. So every South Carolina fan out there, every person in the media that doesn't like Dabo, everybody out there now has this ammunition like, oh, wow, you can get Dabo real fired up. This is fun by saying Clemsoning. So I think that he kind of did give the term CPR, even though their results on the field should have basically put it away and smothered it. But I just, it's amusing to me. I don't know if he's actually going to have to win a championship. But what they've done over the last 4 or 5 years is damned impressive. You can't find programs that have been more consistently good than Clemson over the last 4 or 5 years. You can't find 5 or 6 of them. I mean, you could probably find Alabama, Ohio State, LSU, I mean, there are a couple of them, but Clemson's in that mix of 5 or 10 teams that has been consistently good this entire time. The only thing you can really say about Dabo is that he has a 2-5 record against the ball coach, and he has a 2-5 record against Jimbo Fisher. Those are the two teams that he has been subpar against. But I don't think there's any way you can look at this year's game, even though it's Ken Williams-Bryce, and say anything other than, well, that record's going to be 3-5. And who knows who South Carolina's next coach is going to be next year. And it's going to be 4-5 pretty quickly if they keep the same staff intact. So it's basically the only thing you can really say about him, or will be able to say another year or two, is he hasn't beat Florida State a lot. Maybe he's got a chance to change it this year. 843-652-3776. Getting things started on the phone lines with Eddie. Eddie, what's going on, my man?
Hey, Lewis. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well, man. What's up?
First of all, good job Saturday.
Thank you. Always tough on the broadcast booth when you got to carry an hour, 45-minute rain delay out of nowhere, and I thought Aaron did a great job at that.
Well, I thought both of you did outstanding. I am not pleased with the way our boys played, of course.
No, and Eddie, I'm going to mention that a little later in the program, but
sure.
They're not playing like a number one team at all. I mean, Presbyterian almost ran for 200 yards. Their defensive front has a lot of injuries. And I am concerned that I don't know that they're going to get upset this regular season, but I'm glad they've got a bye week, because if Charleston Southern was coming up next weekend, that would not be ideal.
Yeah, I agree. But anyway, I'm diverging from my point. I apologize.
Sure, go on, Clemson.
And my point is Dabo Swinney.
Yep.
You know how we Clemson people feel about him. We love him.
Oh, sure.
And his players. I'm gonna tell you something. You can get on TigerNet and you can look at what his players are ecstatic about the rant that he went on, because those guys feel like he totally has their back. And what he said was not wrong. And if people keep on with this Clemsoning, it's crazy. I mean, Kirk Herbstreit said it's time to put that term to bed.
And he's been one of the worst offenders of using it. Like, he was using it even last year.
Yep. But he said on sports, on College Game Day,
yep,
it's time to put it to bed.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my bigger question is, what are they going to have to do for people to give them the respect that they would typically get for winning as many games as they have? And, I mean, I don't know if it's a national championship, a playoff appearance. I mean, I don't know what they have to do to get national respect, because it's confusing to me.
I don't have an answer for that, Lewis. Yeah, I wish I did.
Yeah.
All we can do is just sit back and watch and enjoy it as Clemson people.
Yeah, absolutely, Eddie. A great point. 843-652-3776 is the number. Appreciate the call as always. But, yeah, when you have a 5-0 team that has already gotten rid of the majority of the challenges on the schedule, you're worried about the team not being focused, right? You're worried about the team thinking about the playoff when it's got another 5 or 6 regular season games left. And having this whole Clemsoning ordeal, I mean, that clearly fires them up in a week where they might not have been fired up. And I know, all due respect to Dabo Swinney, who said that they could lose to Boston College. I mean, frankly, that's a joke. Boston College has the number one ranked defense in the country and yards allowed, but get this, their offense has, I don't know that I've ever seen a worse offense in college football, like, history. I mean, look at this. Boston College is 0-3 in the ACC. They played Wake, Duke, and Florida State. Across those three games against Wake, Duke, and Florida State, Boston College's offense has generated 7 points in 3 games against Power 5 opponents. They're going in facing a Clemson defense that's top 10 in most categories, and their offense has scored 7 points in 3 Power 5 games. There is no way that Clemson can lose that game. And you look at the rest of their schedule coming up. NC State's not as good as we thought. Miami, I don't think, is good at all. Miami looks like someone put a bunch of elite track and field athletes and gave them a football for the first time. I mean, Al Golden's inability to turn Miami area athletes into a functional, cohesive football team is beyond me. I think he's in his last year. I mean, you look at their schedule, and they really don't have anybody that can knock them off except for when Florida State and Everett Golson come into Memorial Stadium. And I do buy into what Eddie's saying, that it's a good thing for Clemson that they have this, I guess, motivational tool that people keep on using the word Clemsoning. 843-652-3776. Sam is up next on Sound Off. What do you got for us, man?
Hey, man. So when North Carolina beats them in the ACC championship,
ooh,
that happened. Isn't that, wouldn't that be considered Clemsoning?
Well,
I'm just
if North Carolina has a ranking at the time, if they're 25th, is it still Clemsoning? That's an interesting hypothetical. I do think, for the record, it will be North Carolina or Duke that sees Clemson in Charlotte.
Well, I don't think that the term isn't not losing to a ranked opponent. It's losing to an opponent you're not supposed to. You know, if Clemson's number 2 and, you know, for example, Boston College is, you know, at 19, you know, obviously,
right,
the term is there because there was an issue there at some point. Now, whether that's not the case now, you know,
sure,
time will tell on that. Dave's done a great job. But I mean, as far as national recognition, aren't they like ranked number 6 or 10 in the AP right now? I think they're kind of getting their due
fifth,
right now.
Yeah, fifth. Fifth is the number on the ESPN poll. That might be coaches.
Right.
But they're, yes, I mean, they are fifth in the AP right now and sixth in the coaches poll, Clemson is.
So I think that the time is over of, you know, woe is Clemson. We don't get our respect. We don't get, you know, we don't get our due comings. You know, it's not like the Panthers who are, you know, 4-0 and everybody's talking about, what's the worst 4-0 team? It's the Panthers. I mean, that, you know, it is what it is. No one's saying that Clemson's the worst undefeated team. If they have that case, then I could feel them on that. But, yeah, it's going to be exciting. I like it anytime a local team does well. I don't have a horse dog in the fight until it gets to the ACC tournament. So we'll see what happens between now and then. You know, it's real easy. I mean, look at Oklahoma. I mean, we thought Oklahoma was a really good team, and they tripped up against Texas, who might end up being a little bit better than what everyone thinks.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not over. I mean, obviously, if that was the case, we'd go ahead and put Clemson in the ACC championship. We don't have to worry about playing the rest of the games. But that's not the case. We do have to play the games. And, you know, things happen. You're talking about kids. They have bad weeks. So even though you have a really good team, you know, your quarterback throws 3 or 4 wrong picks or has a fumble, and next thing you know, you're at the bottom looking up, and you can't quite get back, and, you know, you lose a game against Miami or Boston College. So it's going to be exciting to see how, you know, all goes out. But I definitely think that Clemson is definitely getting their due, And I think they'll continue to do so to keep on winning. You guys have a good day.
Yep, appreciate the call, Sam. 843-652-3776. What is Clemson going to have to do for Clemsoning basically to die as a term? Sam thinks that they are getting their respect because they're top 10 in the polls right now. And I will say this, the Florida State game on November 7th is their true test. I mean, that's the one that you circle. Florida State right now ranked 11th. Had some issues putting Miami away. Haven't quite turned the total playbook over to Everett Golson. If you watch them, there's a lot of dink and dunk kind of passes. They're stretching the field side to side a lot with the passing game, a lot of screens. And Dalvin Cook is not really getting any mentions in the Heisman conversation right now. But his, aside from Fournette, he's probably been the second most impressive running back in the country. So I don't mean to say that go ahead and pencil Clemson's name in Charlotte and in the playoff. I would bet on them beating Florida State because the game's at home, and I think that Clemson is a better team right now than Florida State. But Florida State can absolutely beat them. As I mentioned, Jimbo Fisher's 5-2 against Dabo, and Dalvin Cook is a total game changer. And that wasn't talked about enough when he was getting accused of domestic violence in the offseason. Or I guess it wasn't domestic, it was assault against a female in public, whatever. And they took the team picture with and without him. Florida State would be up you-know-what's creek if they didn't have Dalvin Cook. I mean, he's put up some 200-yard games. He has been tremendous. And they needed every bit of his 200-plus yards to beat Miami last week. But another thing, you know, in a couple of weeks, November 7th, Golson's going to have better command in his first year at Florida State of that playbook. And that'll be interesting, of course, seeing a team in this state, Clemson, having their playoff hopes on the line against a quarterback that was raised in this city. Very interesting. Will be fun to watch. I do hope both of those teams go into that game undefeated because that will be a lot of fun to see the national hype on that game. 843-652-3776 is the number. And we're going to pivot here. If you have a thought on Dabo and Clemsoning, we do have room for you. But another topic of conversation that I really wanted to get into was South Carolina after losing to LSU 45-24. The fact that they lost by that much, not surprising at all. They have a surprise road game. Everything that's been going on in Columbia, everything that's been going on in that season, they're down their top two quarterbacks in Connor Mitch and Lorenzo Nunez. They're going back to Perry Orth. The line was 19.5, so Vegas was spot on. LSU wins by 21. So nothing about that outcome was surprising. But one thing that I did find surprising was Steve Spurrier taking a real shot at running back Brandon Wilds for not playing against LSU. This is Spurrier after the game.
Brandon Wilds took himself out. Brandon Wilds said, my rib hurts, I can't play. That's why Brandon Wilds didn't play.
You said that pregame?
Pregame.
Mm-hmm. Is that a surprise to you?
Yeah, it was a surprise. Y'all ask him. He said he was hurt, couldn't play. And we're not going to put anybody out there that won't play if they say they're hurt. So that was his situation.
My thoughts on Spurrier calling out Brandon Wilds coming up next on Sound Off. 843-652-3776 is the number. Interested in hearing yours. Back in a moment. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard, Brian Nelson, handling production duties as usual. 843-652-3776 is the number. Now, as I mentioned to close up last segment, South Carolina losing to LSU. Not surprising the way they lost, not surprising whatsoever. And if you're a South Carolina fan, you've probably punted on the season in terms of having real honest goals of going to a bowl game or having expectations for winning a big game like playing a nationally ranked LSU team. But one thing that is an even worse sign than the fact that you're starting out 0-4 in the SEC is the fact that there are real legitimate signs that the program is crumbling internally. And I thought it was pretty fascinating that Brandon Wilds doesn't play and Spurrier calls him out for not playing. And this is a fifth-year running back, a guy that at least on paper heading into the season is their best back and was just a couple of weeks ago complaining that he didn't get enough carries. And then apparently he goes out in the Georgia game with rib bruising and misses three consecutive games, including LSU. And what we do know is that the South Carolina training staff cleared him and said, Brandon, you can play. And he said, hey, guys, I'm too hurt. I don't want to play. And here is Spurrier mentioning that once again in the postgame press conference.
Brandon Wiles took himself out. Brandon Wiles said, my rib hurts, I can't play. That's why Brandon Wiles didn't play.
You said that pregame?
Pregame. Mm-hmm.
Is that a surprise to you?
Yeah, it was a surprise. Y'all ask him. How he said he was hurt, couldn't play. And we're not going to put anybody out there that won't play if they say they're hurt. So that was his situation.
We kind of saw Spurrier do this with Jadeveon Clowney 2 years ago. I believe it was a rib injury with him as well, and it was prior to the Kentucky game where he went out there and warmed up, and they thought he would be available, and he said, no, I can't play. And Spurrier kind of made the media rounds and questioned his toughness, and then he came back and played the next week. And that's one thing. When you've got a nationally ranked team and a guy who is a presumptive number one pick in the NFL draft, it's a whole other proposition when you're sitting there 0-4 in the SEC and you're calling out a fifth-year senior who's one of the few playmakers you have in terms of him in basically questioning his desire to play the game of football. And he went on to say after that, you know, hey, sometimes when you're having a tough streak like this, guys don't want to play. And I think that's a really bad sign. And this kind of wades into the murky waters of one of my least favorite things to do in sports media is question somebody's toughness for not playing through an injury, because we don't have Brandon Wild's ribs. You know, we're not the ones that are going to get smashed by an SEC defense carrying the football with bruised ribs. Now, they're not broken ribs, so there's probably a lot of people out there saying, oh, they're not broken, go ahead and suit up. Be a man. Get out there. Man up, right? There are a lot of people that are probably thinking that, and this is just another example of the South Carolina program. Guys don't want to play anymore. And we don't know what part of that is true because we are not in Brandon Wild's body. I just don't think it's a good look for Spurrier to not be in his body and call him out in a press conference afterward like that. I mean, maybe he sees that as a motivational tactic, and maybe we'll see Wilds run for $150 against Vanderbilt, and you can a week later say, hey, this was a great decision. But in the short term, for everything that they're going through right now, just negative on top of negative, I don't know that really starting a media beef with one of your few good players on offense is a great idea. I mean, I just don't see what he has to gain by mentioning that to reporters. I mean, Josh Kendall, you heard him from the state newspaper, does an excellent job covering the Gamecocks. You heard the back and forth right there. Spurrier just gave Josh Kendall a story that wasn't there. I mean, he could have just said, hey, guy wasn't available. Instead, he introduces the idea that the trainers cleared him and he chooses not to play.
I mean, I think some of it might have to do with what you said, that he asked for the ball more. I mean, if you're going to say, hey, I want the ball more, and then you're cleared by the doctors to play, and you're just be like, oh, I'm not going to play, that's got to be agitating to the coach. I mean, that's like me being like, Lewis, I want to talk on air more, and you're like, Brian, go ahead and talk, and I'll just sit here and be quiet.
You just freeze?
Yeah. So, like, that would be annoying to you, I would assume.
Yeah, I'd be a little irritated by that. The only time that gets me irritated, Brian, is when I ask you a question and you answer with the microphone off. So I can hear it, but the listeners can't. That's what irritates me, so don't do that.
Okay.
Brian, you can call for the ball more. I'll give you the ball more. 843-652-3776 is the number. And the other thing that happened with South Carolina this weekend that was not great was Shamik Blackshear, a freshman defensive end, a four-star, a terrific athlete, a guy that was a very coveted recruit that had legal problems in high school, although he was eventually, charges were dropped. He was charged with petty larceny at one point in time. And he was a guy that had a torn ACL in high school. So while he was a highly rated recruit, there was a lot of baggage that he came in with. And South Carolina stuck by him through his legal problems and patiently waited for them to be resolved, still offered him a scholarship. And I don't know the story on him, whether he hasn't been on the field because of injuries or he hasn't been effective in practice or he hasn't been effective in games, but he has been barely out there whatsoever, and South Carolina makes the decision to put a medical redshirt on him so that he doesn't play for the rest of the season, and he can have that season back in his fifth year. He's still on scholarship. I mean, most guys aren't effective in the trenches on the offense and the defensive line as true freshmen, so nothing about that situation is surprising at all. The only thing that really gets surprising is the fact that he tweets out that he should have listened to his parents and looked at more schools, that he should have looked around more, that he locked in on the Gamecocks too early. And that timing is clearly in response to being told he's going to medical redshirt, but I don't understand why that's a negative for a kid that, like, hey, you get to play, you get to be on scholarship for another year in college, and you get to play when you're more healthy and more of a physically grown man against grown men. And it's another example of the team kind of falling apart. If you've got the coach calling out the running back, the freshman defensive end is tweeting that he should have looked at more schools. I mean, none of that's a good look on top of SEC loss after SEC loss. And that is another question. Like, hey, Blackshear, he was a very coveted recruit. If South Carolina doesn't pick him up, there are any number of SEC and ACC schools that would have loved to have had the guy. But at what point do you say, nah, there's a little too much baggage with this kid, even though he's got the four-star next to his name? And that was kind of a discussion. We were trying to figure out how it is the Gamecocks have so little talent on the field relative to 2 or 3 years ago. Were the guys that they were getting overvalued, or did they just, or did they also collect a number of guys like Shaq Rowland who were appropriately rated in terms of athleticism and impact on the football field, but couldn't stay on the football field? I just think that that's not a great look, especially for a kid who has been supported by the university. That's something that's not even a bad piece of news that they're going to try to get a medical redshirt for him prompts him to say, hey, I should have looked around more in the recruiting process. But again, this is the kind of sniping and criticism that tends to happen when your team's not playing well. 843-652-3776 if you have thoughts on that. Also coming up next, Coastal Carolina has a really, really tough run with Presbyterian, a team that had not beat a scholarship program this year. Presbyterian is 1-5 and was on the 9-yard line to put it into overtime against Coastal Carolina on Saturday. My thoughts on that game. Also, don't forget at Buffalo Wild Wings tonight starting at 6 o'clock. Also on this radio station, 100.3 The Team, Chanticleer call-in, Coach Moglia radio show. Must listen to radio coming up in about 12 minutes. Back in a moment. This is Sound Off. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3 of The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. Kind of a wild day in college football news. A wild day. Will Greer, Florida's starting quarterback, is suspended for 365 days, an entire calendar year per NCAA policy. That's what happens when you test positive for a PED. He says that he just didn't diligently read the list. Something he got over the counter at GNC, and it tested positive against something on the NCAA banned list. I'm just surprised that he got tested because I had two medical red shirts, and in 6 years in the NCAA, I never once got tested. And my buddy who coaches track in the SEC has been at his school for 3 years, and he's not had one of his athletes tested. So the fact that an NCAA athlete gets drug tested is an upset. I mean, it's a rarity. You can go 4, 5, 6 years in the NCAA and not get tested. And so it's kind of crazy that he now is suspended for an entire year. And Steve Sarkisian, we learned yesterday that he's on a leave of absence and Southern California just decides to can him today. So that's a very good football program at Southern California looking for a head coach in the offseason. And if you think that South Carolina is looking for a head coach in the offseason, that's not ideal. You don't want programs with better draws than yourself in terms of recruiting base and potential money on the table. Now, South Carolina is paying $4 million for head coach right now, so they have proven that they'll pay someone to come in and coach. But I think Southern California is in that list of 5 or 10 schools in terms of best overall programs, and I don't think South Carolina is on that list. So I think that's, you know, if you're a South Carolina fan, that's a little unfortunate that another one of those jobs is going to be open this year.
The real USC?
Don't do that, Brian. Not here. SoCal. That's what I'm going to continue to call it. See, I will not call them the real USC. I have a hard time calling them Carolina, but I will say North Carolina and South Carolina, and I will say USC. But Coastal Carolina, number one still in the FCS coaches poll, has a very close call, 24-17, with Presbyterian on Saturday. In an unusual rain delay game, Presbyterian uses a quarterback that hasn't been used in 2 years. So Coastal Carolina hadn't seen the guy on film at all. And going into the game, Presbyterian's quarterbacks had combined for a 38% completion ratio. So they had nothing but bad quarterbacks, and they pull out a guy who's more competent out of nowhere. And they run the football really well. They put about $195 on the ground against Coastal Carolina, and they make it a really tough game, a surprisingly tough game. And going into that game, Presbyterian was 1-4, and their only win was against Campbell, who does not have any football scholarships. While Campbell is in the Big South in basketball, it's not in football because they are a zero scholarship FCS independent. So there was nothing on Presbyterian's resume to indicate that that game should have been within two or three touchdowns. And Coastal had the football run all over them, and they end up winning because they in turn ran the football well against Presbyterian, and special teams continues to be what they excel at, Coastal Carolina. Ryan Granger gets a lot of specialist player of the week and year honors this week because he ends up on a fake field goal scoring on an option pitch from former Myrtle Beach High School quarterback Tyler Keene, which is pretty cool. Coach Mowgli has always had he's always had big balls in special teams. I'll just go ahead and say it. I mean, they have never been afraid to fake anything. They've never been afraid to try something risky in terms of two-point conversions. And they end up winning in large part because of that play. And Granger ends up connecting on three field goals, including one of them that was 47 yards in the rain. So again, Coastal Carolina playing a tight game, and they win because the difference is in special teams. But they're going into a week where they have a bye week right now, and one of their defensive linemen and their starting front four to begin the season, Crowder, has quit football. Another one of them, another two of them are hurt in terms of Calvin Hollenhorst, and I'm blanking out on the name of the other gentleman, but they, in terms of their starting front four to start off the season, only one of them, Rod Holder, is perfectly healthy right now, and I'm concerned because of that about their run defense a little bit. But they do have a bye week to rest up, and they have a road game against Monmouth coming up the following weekend before they play Charleston Southern on Halloween. So that one, if you're circling a game where Coastal, they've been playing a little uneven, where they're really going to get tested, that Charleston Southern game appears to be really dangerous, and they need the bye week now more than ever. So Sean Clear call-ins coming up next on this radio station. If you want to hear Coach Moglia's take, the always entertaining Coach Moglia, Aaron Marks hosting it tonight because Joe Cashin, the voice of the Sean Clear, is still filling in with the National Guard. Helping out flood victims. So can't praise Joe enough for the work that he does on air or what he does as a member of the National Guard as well. Very, very cool. But also wanted to shout out Leonard Fournette for donating his game jersey, auctioning it off, and have the proceeds go to South Carolina.
Oh, before we start, I'd like to read something that I typed up just for them. Somebody just typed for the people out there in South Carolina. I want to send my prayers, condolences, and empathy to the people of South Carolina. What they are going through reminds me of what we went through, my people in New Orleans, Louisiana, went through 10 years ago with Hurricane Katrina. We played a game today that people of South Carolina right now in need. I would like to auction off my game jersey as is to the highest bidder to help out the relief efforts. People of Louisiana not only cares, but know firsthand what you, South Carolina, are going through.
So classy gesture from Fournette after he ends up beating South Carolina. Not much of a topic there, except maybe the NCAA, by allowing him to do that, admits that the LSU number 7 has value, which is something that they would previously say, hey, it's just the LSU on his chest, not the fact that this belongs to Leonard Fournette. So there is some irony there that perhaps in allowing him to do this, they are going to disprove a point that they have been trying to prove themselves in court cases. Now, let's do a little call a day here.
It's time for the most coveted prize in North America, Sound Off Call of the Day.
Eddie thinks that the Clemsoning idea and Dabo's rampage against it in the press conference following their Georgia Tech win, he thinks that is a positive that the players will respond to it.
His players are ecstatic about the rant that he went on because those guys feel like he totally has their back.
And I can see that. I mean, Dabo has always had his players back and vice versa. He's an emotional guy, fiery guy, always sticking up for his players. I mean, guys have drug problems, and he basically covers it up for them and, you know, lets them enter the supplemental draft and says they're taking time away to be with their families. I mean, he seems to, at all angles, stick up for his players. I think it keeps them focused, too. Heading into a game against Boston College keeps them focused, keeps them angry. Sean Clear calling coming up next. Leroy Cummings was a defensive tackle who got hurt. Just popped into my head. I hate saying I know something that I don't. So anyways, he went out in the second half. Hopefully he gets healthy in the bye week. All right, stay right here for the Joe Mowgli Radio Show.